Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. As always, my name is James Gearing, and this week it is my absolute honor to welcome on the show veteran firefighter, cancer survivor, and the founder of the Decon Project, Patrick Long. Now, in this conversation, we discuss a host of topics, from his unique journey into the fire service, the potential hazards on submarines, his powerful cancer story, the importance of post-fire decons, the use of sauna, and so much more. Now, before we get to this incredible conversation, as I say every week, please just take a moment. Go to whichever app you listen to this on, subscribe to the show, leave feedback, and leave a rating. Every single five-star rating truly does elevate this podcast, therefore making it easier for others to find. And this is a free library of over 1,200 episodes now. So all I ask in return is that you help share these incredible men and women's stories so I can get them to every single person on planet Earth who needs to hear them. So with that being said, I introduce to you Patrick Long. Enjoy. Well, Patrick, I want to start by saying thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast today.
Hey, thank you so much, James. I am beyond excited and really thankful for this opportunity. And I'm looking forward to having a great conversation and getting to know each other a little bit more and sharing some things that I'm working on and what I feel God's kind of blessed me with and pointing me to. So really excited. Thank you.
Likewise. So very first question, where on planet Earth are we finding you today?
Hey man, I am in Waverly, Georgia. It is definitely just a dot on the map. There is not much here, and I would say for those of us that live here, that's exactly how we like it. But kind of moved from Atlanta, where it was big city, bustling and hustling all the time, and we've caught ourselves out here in what we would consider the woods. Now, I will say it's the coolest thing, man. We're 20 minutes from the beach, but kind of out here in the woods and got ourselves a little chunk of property. It's amazing. We're very, very blessed. So, yeah, Waverly, Georgia, I think we have a population of less than 1,000 people in this little spot. So pretty fun.
We just had that massive weather, you know, cold ice storm move through the states. We got pretty cold down here. We got in the low 20s, nothing crazy. I think parts of our county got a little bit of snow. What did you experience up there?
Yeah, same, man. Super cold, super windy. We did have flurries, and that was really cool because we don't expect to see that very much around here, probably much like you. But, yeah, it was – I tell everybody, all my buddies that are like from up north and stuff like that, we have I feel like it's just a different form of cold when you're kind of on the coast or in the southeast. It's like the humidity hits with the cold weather and almost like we're not used to it. So it hits us twice as hard. But it was the wind for me. Like, I mean, my face got chapped. I was on shift. My face got chapped. My lips got chapped. All that stuff. But I did see videos of guys like fighting fire and stuff in like a couple feet of snow. And I'm like, at least I can't complain about anything. At least we didn't have that. So very thankful.
I've always seen those videos because I experienced most of my career in either California, Southern California, or Central Florida. So, or actually South Florida as well. So super hot on the East Coast, super humid. And there is no way, as you know, of offsetting that heat, but I've never had to unfreeze a fire hydrant. So,
That's right. Yes. I'm so thankful. And everything also where I'm at, and since I've been a firefighter, everything I'm at is right there. Everything's flat. We don't really have any crazy hills. We'll go up to the mountains in North Georgia and like do a vacation or something like that. And you'll see these driveways where the driveway is like this. And I'm like, The only thing I can think about as a firefighter is trying to hump hose all the way up that incline just to get to the front door of the house. Like, I couldn't even imagine. So, especially when you're putting ice and snow into the mix, that would just be brutal. And so my complaints, I get humbled pretty quickly. And by my own mind, I'm like, at least I don't have to do that. Those guys are the real beasts. So I'm very happy. Yeah.
The closest I ever got to seeing someone like that, I went on a really good fire in Southern California, and the house was owned by a tweaker, and he had tiled all the firewalls in the house, and he tiled his entire front driveway with that kind of like slick bathroom tile. So okay. First everyone's walking around and they're fine. Well, then when right. they start flowing water, it's literally like Disney on Ice, Fireman Edition.
It's like a slip and slide, dude. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, yeah, he was, that's a hardworking tweaker right there. By
oh, exactly.
The way.
Yeah.
Not,
his work
that's not easy work.
No, it was impeccable.
Yeah. That's incredible, man. Well, awesome. Yeah. I would say I would count us both blessed. I mean, I've had some crazy calls. Yeah, you know, we all have. That's one of the coolest parts of this job is like you're going to see things that you're like, I've never in a million years expected to see something like that. But I've been very blessed to avoid most of the snow and the cold. Now, hurricanes, things like that, obviously we got them in droves here, you know, since I've been a part of it. We've had 5 or 6 major hurricanes come this way, and you know, you got to navigate that. And I didn't really ever have to worry about that in Atlanta or anything. So coming down here, that's every year around that time, it's like, let's go, okay, what are we in for it this year or not? You know, so probably much like you probably feel the exact same way. So yeah, I think about that all the time, how lucky I am to be where I'm at. So
what are some of the calls, if any, spring to your mind that actually correlate with the I never thought I'd ever see that in my lifetime kind of call?
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you one of the first calls that I went to that it's like the old wives' tale, like, you know, your mom used to say, hey, don't climb on the fence. You're going to lose a finger. You know, if you climb up on the fence, that top, you know, it's going to catch your hand and you'll get stuck dangling right there in your hand. And I always was like, dude, I've climbed millions of fences. Like we've jumped all, you know, I grew up playing baseball. Like we'd jump around all over the fences, go play ball, do whatever. And sure enough, I went to a guy that had broke into a store and he was hopping over a fence. And actually, this is the reason I wear a rubber wedding ring, but it got caught in his wedding band and he's hanging up on this fence stuck there, and it did a quality degloving on his finger, and he's essentially hanging on by the skin of his finger, and you know the ring had degloved the rest of it and he's just stuck there. I don't know, stole probably $60 worth of stuff from this store and gets stuck like that. And then we had to lift him off, get him off the fence, transport him to the hospital for that. And I'm like, I never in a million years thought that would be, I always just thought that was an old wives' tale. Like, ah, oh, don't do it. You know, I thought that was something your mom would tell you just so that you didn't have to, you know, jump, you weren't doing something dumb. And sure enough, here's a grown man dangling by his skin of his finger because it got caught in his wedding band. I thought that was pretty wild. I've got plenty more that are maybe not as listener clean as maybe they could be of some pretty wild scenarios. I will tell you one, a guy went out, I think how every grown man wants to go out making love to his wife. And, he had always said, hey, I'm going to die making love to my wife is what his wife said. And, sure enough, had a massive heart attack during that fun encounter with, you know, his wife. What we do as married couples, and we show up and he was having some help and you know, with some medications, and we were doing like the whole work and all that. That was really wild. Never thought I'd have to go to that, but we did. And I've got a couple more that I would say off air that were pretty wild and some great paramedicking, but those are just a few. What about you? Anything that comes to mind?
Well, when you mentioned hopping over a fence, I remember one we had a guy, and it wasn't someone, you know, committing a crime. I think he was just, you know, taking a shortcut, whatever it was, and had a complete ankle dislocation. So his you know, ankle and foot completely ripped off, tib fib, you know, the ends of them are hanging out. But he's in shock, so we're trying to get him to stop, and he keeps walking on the edge of his tib fib. Yep. I mean, you know, some of the things you see when people should be just on the ground screaming, and they're almost oblivious to gunshot wounds or whatever it is. Those are some of the ones that really used to blow my mind.
Those really are crazy. I'll tell another one that I have that I remember this being like a aha moment. So obviously I grew up playing sports and all that, and we would always be told like wear compression shorts, like under your, don't just wear boxer briefs, right? Well, I went to the local high school for a football player that was injured at practice. And, you know, you're showing up with a million different things of like, what the heck's going on? Well, it only took me a couple seconds to realize he was holding his man parts and clutched up in the recovery position. And he said, I was running a route. He's a wide receiver. I was running a route and I laid out for the ball. And when I landed, it felt like my guys got all twisted up. And so, you know what testicular torsion is. And it's because he said, I didn't have time. I didn't pack my compression shorts and anything like that. I was just running around in boxers and that happened. And I'm like, that is a nightmare scenario. I said, there is nothing I can put into my mind that's going to help me truly understand the pain that you're in. The great thing is we're about 3 minutes from the hospital. I'm going to get you there as quick as possible. But that was another scenario. I'm like, I never in a million years thought I'd go to a, you know, 17-year-old kid running a football route and have testicular torsion. Like that was crazy. I really had no clue, but that was another crazy one that I definitely can share. So, yeah, there's plenty in the that we all know about that are crazy, and sometimes they're just better left to be said at just a firehouse. So. Man.
I'm amazed you don't see more of that in the UFC, the testicular 360 for the tap out.
Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly right. And that, I mean, what a move that would be, you know? So it's funny. Those guys will beat themselves to a pulp, like punch their face, punch their gut. Like, you know, you're breaking ribs, but the minute one of them gets a random kick to the groin, they stop the fight. They're like, yo, stop. I always think that's so funny. I'm like, this guy literally has a broken nose, probably a broken orbit, probably broken ribs. He gets hit in the nuts and it's like, stop the fight. We got to pause for a second. It's like, man, we're kind of backwards on that. So
yeah,
it's funny.
That whole Achilles heel thing, I don't think it was his heel. It was Achilles nuts, probably. They just
wrote it. It was Achilles nuts. That's exactly right. It just, you know, trying to keep it PG. But yeah, your brother, he's 18 months younger than me. And so kind of grew up almost like twins, like as far as like just how close we were in age. We looked very similar, acted similar. So we were always kind of you know, mistaken for each other all the time and stuff like that. Both very different, but very, very similar at the same regard. And now he's in the Marines. He's doing great things. He's been doing awesome for a long time. So, really proud of him. And, grew up in South Georgia or South Atlanta. Absolutely loved where I grew up. Like, it was very, very small town, really, up until I was in high school. Then it started growing, much like most of the, you know, suburban Atlanta. But, man, grew up playing sports. Baseball was definitely my, like, sport of choice. But I played some football. I swam all through high school. Man, did it all. Like, we were really, really involved in all sports. But baseball was kind of what I loved and felt a huge passion for very, very early on. and was super blessed. It gave me an opportunity to get a scholarship to go play in college, and played baseball at Jacksonville University for 2 years in Jacksonville, Florida. And it's kind of how I became familiar with the area that we live in now, is I had some friends kind of live up here in this area, and I'd go and visit them from time to time and go and stop by for like a day vacation or two. And that was really fun. And then I transferred to Georgia Gwinnett College, which is in North Atlanta. And incredible baseball program there. They really have taken off. I mean, I was super blessed. I was part of the very first team. I will go down in history as the very first person to strike out as a Georgia Gwinnett Grizzly. So I'll wear that. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Great time. That's where I met my wife. So we've known each other for a long time now. I've been married for 10 years and together for 12. So just super happy with that. This will be our 10th year in November. And she still likes me, so I'm really happy. And yeah, I've been in the fire service really. This is my, 10th year in the fire service. And so freaking cool. You know how, as well as I do, it really does blow by. I mean, the first couple of years, you are just like, I'm a new guy, and you're just trying to play catch up all the time and not mess up. And then all of a sudden, you're in one day, it seems like they hire a bunch of new guys, and now somehow you're a senior guy, and you're supposed to be coaching them and helping them. And I love that dynamic. And I would say that my childhood, they did a great job. My parents did a great job of teaching me. Being part of a team is something I knew very early on. I wanted to be a teammate. I really enjoyed being part of a team. I didn't gravitate towards the individual sports and things like that. I really loved being on a team. And when I got done with ball in college, there was about 6 months where I had a business degree. I've got a business degree and minor in marketing. And I was like, man, I'm going to go out and use this. And I didn't know exactly what to do. I got into logistics, thought I would try that out. And man, knew very quickly, I was like, this is not what I'm called to do. It is me sitting on a phone or behind a computer, cold calling, reaching out, doing whatever. And then the next day, it's kind of like the same thing. And there's not really much of a teamwork thing. It's about what I'm bringing to the table. I missed that. And so I knew very early on, I was like, I'm either probably going to look into the military or I'm going to look into the fire service, which is something I'd always prayed over and thought, man, that'd be really, really cool. And so kind of in one fair swoop, I started applying to different military branches, and took the ASVAB, did all that. And I was wanting to go in as an officer. I had my degree. And at the same time, I was working out at a gym there in Gwinnett County, and a couple of the guys I worked out with were with the fire department there. It's a really big fire department. They're a great fire department. They'll put you from firefighter all the way to medic. It's a good department to be a part of. And they're like, man, we can, pull some strings and get you on. I feel like you'd be a guy that'd be a great candidate. And man, they did. They got me in. And man, this kind of opens up kind of a crazy trajectory, but I'm so glad that I got on there. And I will actually tell you, so it's called the Zero to Hero program, and that's how it was. I don't believe it's like this anymore, but you are fully paid, fully compensated, covered, you're insured, everything, and your whole job is to be an EMT student, and then you're going to go straight to medic, and then you were going to get your Fire 1 and Fire 2. And I know other programs have done the same thing. But for me, I had no experience. And so you're just kind of like trial by, you're being thrown into the fire, no pun intended. You are learning on the fly. And, I got through EMT, got my EMT, getting a medic, like doing really well, kind of starting to make a name for myself with clinicals and third rides and things like that. I'm really hitting it off. And I knew after the first day of being in the firehouse, like my very first day spending the night at the firehouse, I was like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like I knew it. I was so thankful. I remember coming home and just telling my wife, Cassie, and praying. I was like, I found out what I'm supposed to be doing right now. And I'm so happy. And, you know, and so going through that, really enjoying the process, but I'll be honest, and you know this, like medic is not easy. And at the speed and pace, especially when you don't have any really like calls or background to build off of, I got behind. I was good at regurgitating the information, but when it was time to really start understanding applications and having things build, well, if this happens to this, what does this mean for this? You know, that wasn't clicking. I didn't have enough experience with that. And I've learned that I'm a hands-on learner. If you show me something two or three times and then let me try it once, I probably got it. But if I'm just reading it, it might never click, you know? And so thank God for YouTube and thank God for all the instructors and guys that took me under their wing and showed me. I'm so thankful for that. It was such a blessing. But got all the way to the final exam of medic, not even national registry, just the final exam for the class. And I failed it not once, but twice. And so they had a rule, if you failed multiple tests throughout that course, you know, they release you. And even though it was the final, and even though I was a guy that they really enjoyed and wanted to be a part of, rules are rules. So I couldn't be mad. I had to respect that, because if they would have let me get through and not somebody else would have used that and been like, well, you let Pat get through or whatever. And so, man, I will tell you, that was like one of my first like major times of like, I failed. Like I didn't do well enough. I had always had a pretty, easy time with school. You know, I've always been pretty successful at, you know, whatever I was really wanting to put my mind to. This was the first thing that I was putting so much effort, so much time, so much thought and prayer into, and I still failed. And I didn't know what the heck to do after. And I'll be honest, I was freaking out. I'm like, is this what I'm supposed to do? Like, I thought this was it. And man, I just started applying to other places around the area, around Atlanta, which we're very blessed. There's like hundreds of departments to apply to. In the meantime, I got hired on by a little private EMS company, and no bash to private EMS, because there's different shape sizes and departments for that. But the one that I did was mostly just 1013 transports. So you're not really doing much for the patient. Half the time they're asleep, you know, they're pumped full of Haldol or something. But, it didn't scratch the itch that I was wanting. But I was like, I just got to keep doing this and an opportunity will open up. And, long story short, a friend of a friend had a buddy down here at Glynn County Fire Department where I, now like right here where we live. And he said, hey, you know, they're a busy department. They get after it. One of the things that he knew I was looking for is they'll put you through medic class. And I really wanted that. I wanted another shot at it. I had kind of taken the punch in the chin, questioned, am I supposed to be doing that, all that. And then I realized like, no, I want another go at this thing. And while we're finding out that we're, you know, my wife and I are expecting, we just pack up, leave everything that we know, come down to a town that we didn't know anything about, didn't know a soul, and start up with a fire department, was making like, I mean, laughable how little we were getting paid at that, you know, an hour to start just as an EMT and first responder. But man, they put me through fire school. They put me through advanced EMT and then into my medic. And I'm so thankful for it. I was there for almost 6 years. It was like 5 years and 11 months. Great experience, a lot of calls, a lot of crazy stuff happen, and that I got to be an opportunity to do. And I tell everybody, I really love being a medic, but down here, I loved being on the ambulance the most because we got to have nozzle on structure fires. That was one of the perks of being on the ambulance here, down here. And so they would try and take me off the ambulance and I would just be like, heck no, man, let's keep going. Or I'm going to get this next cert because I loved, the patient care aspect. I love being a patient advocate. And then I also loved having nozzle on a fire. And then even the best part is I loved once the fire was out, me looking at my officer and be like, hey, we got to go back into service, you know? And so I didn't have to roll up any hose, nothing. It's not the greatest thing to do, but we've all done that. We've all played that card. So we got to have our fun and then dip out. So that was really fun. And then almost 4 years ago, I had an opportunity to get on here where I'm currently at with Naval Submarine Base Kings Bay here in Kings Bay, Georgia. We're a federal fire department, and it is so different, but still the same, man. Every fire department's got 99% the same qualities. It's just, we have different training, and honestly, there's nothing on this world that's going to prepare you for training on a submarine. It is unlike anything I've ever seen or done. And just like we were talking about earlier, never in a million years did I think some kid from South Atlanta would be, doing training on a submarine. Never ever. And so, for that, every time we step foot on one of those, I'm kind of starstruck. I'm impressed. You just how big they are, how powerful our Navy is. Really, really cool. And most importantly, I'm just praying the whole time that nothing ever happens, because this is going to be one heck of a mess if something pops off on one of these things. So that's kind of where I'm at now. And yeah, that kind of adds up my whole 10, almost 11 years now of fire EMS. And it has been an absolute blast. I love it. I will tell you from a guy that, has talked about mental health and stuff like that, I've had months where I'm just questioning, am I supposed to still be doing this? Or, you get in that rut and maybe you're starting to feel burnout because, I got my medic like 6 months before COVID really popped off, and COVID was really hard on everybody, obviously. I mean, but for first responders, that was a battle I had never expected to face ever. And we were just so inundated with calls. So it felt like we were literally like alone trying to like figure out each step all the time. Like everybody's trying to figure stuff out, and we're still expected to go to work. And everything did was, instead of running 10 calls on a shift, you run 15 to 16 and you're just gassed, and people are quitting or people are getting sick. And so you're getting forced overtime all the time. And it was really, really hard. And it played a lot of mind games with you. And so that was a really interesting time, a really hard time. But I look back and I'm like, I'm so glad that I grinded through some of those really difficult challenges, because man, I really love where I'm at now. And I believe that that's kind of, it is normal to anybody that is struggling with, having a tough month or a tough couple of shifts. Just know you're not alone, that you're not the only person that's sitting there at 3 a.m. coming back from a stubbed toe, wondering if you made the right choice. It is okay. And I promise you, you're there for a reason. And it's that time with the guys in the firehouse. It's the camaraderie. It's those things that get you through. And I will tell you, the brotherhood For me personally, the what I've got to witness this last year in my career and in my personal life of the firehood and brotherhood surrounding me and my family and carrying me through a really difficult time, I've never been so impressed and so thankful to be a part of it. It shows how much bigger it is than just running calls or riding on really cool trucks. So in a nutshell, a little bit of the story and kind of how I ended up where I'm at. So
you mentioned about failing out of medic school the first time. And I think that's a great reflection of where we used to be, where we should be, which is, you know, minimum standards. And, you know, in a profession where we're truly making life-saving interventions, whether it's a cric, it's certain meds, the bar shouldn't be lowered. You talked also about all the places around Atlanta, you know, were hiring, but you're still, you know, trying to figure out where you're going to go. And you end up obviously on coastal Georgia. In 10 short years ago, how competitive was it to get hired in the fire service in Georgia?
Oh man, it was, things were very competitive. You know, my class at Gwinnett, they had multiple classes each year, recruit classes of 50 to 60 students, and maybe 10 of them at the end would be graduating and with everything. Like, those are really crazy numbers. And it was like that at a bunch of different departments. The town that I grew up in, there were hiring days where the line was out the door, you know, and interview days where the line was out the door. And unfortunately now, I mean, even with Department of Defense and stuff with our pay and comparative schedules and whatever else, it's still extremely hard to get people to come in and sign up for it, especially younger people, you know. And it bums me out so much. And I hope that I hate that there's like that financial part of it, that we're so far behind financially, because this job pays you back so well with the brotherhood and with the camaraderie and all that. It really, in my opinion, is the greatest job on the planet because of the stuff that you get to do and the people that you get to build a life with. I mean, you really do have a second family. But for young people, I'm not on here to bad talk like, oh, this generation is so weak or anything like that. I would say more or less it's the fire service in general has constantly raised its hand and taken on more stuff. My dad way back in the day was a volunteer firefighter in New York, and not in the city of New York, but in Poughkeepsie, Newburgh area is where he was. And he said they literally just would go to wrecks and fires. That was it. You know, you didn't have, but then what do? Most fire departments were like, hey, we'll take on EMS. We'll take on hazmat. We'll take on tech rescue. We'll take on all these things. We're constantly the ones that take on more and more. And we're the last ones to complain about anything. We'll complain to ourselves all the time. Firefighters will complain to other firefighters about everything. And heaven forbid my wife ever wrote a book about all my complaints. But we don't complain to other people or outward or complain up that well, really, as a group. Firefighters don't complain to the right people well enough about certain things like pay, like healthcare, things like that. We're always just like, hey, we can take that on. We can shoulder that weight. And that's super respectful, but it is making it to where I would say nowadays, these young guys that are coming in and they're looking at how much work is expected compared to really just what's on the fine print as far as pay. And they're like, I don't know if that's something I'm willing to take on because I can't put into a monetary value the costs and, and how awesome the payment is when you have a good shift or you run a really good call with your bros and you're coming back from that call laughing and making jokes and you're eating a great meal and watching the Super Bowl. That to me is priceless, but for some young guy standing in line, he might not see it that way. He has no clue. And so it's really hard to get new people to get in the door and get new people hired on. Matter of fact, it seems like a lot of the guys I've seen lately that are getting hired are almost in that line of like middle age, and they're looking for like a career change or like looking for something to challenge them. And they're a little bit more well-versed in their life or knowledgeable on what they want. And they've been there and done that on some things, and they're wanting that challenge that the fire department brings. And, you know, that's kind of a scary time. Cause I'm not old enough, but I know when, the housing market crashed in 2008 and the bubble, that was when you saw big lines out the door like crazy. And it kind of continued on through for a couple years there. And, you know, it's funny how quickly we kind of lose sight of all that, and we don't realize how just how awesome this job is. We just see what's on paper, and it's hard to get new people in. And I know I was really long-winded, but that's really what I got. So do you feel kind of the same way from what you see and where y'all are at?
Yeah, I mean, what I've seen is, you know, I use this story a lot. When I competed for one of only 15 positions in my class in California, mm-hmm. at the written test, there were 1,000 candidates, and they wow. were, you know, resumes, yeah. you know, they had previous yeah. experience. They had all their certs. They were wildland. They were ambulance operators. I mean, you yep. know, super, super competitive. And this is what I hold as a benchmark, because that was, was it now literally 20 years ago? 20, 21 years ago.
Yeah.
And so all the way through to about 10 years ago, most of us were still rapport. It was very competitive. But what I have seen is there are elements that are broken as far as the way firefighters have worked, not the job. Mm-hmm. I love the yeah. job, which is why 7 years out of uniform, I'm still fighting for people in the job. But you cannot work people more and more and more and more without yeah. you know, a collapse, whether it's a collapse of the yep. profession, the individuals, their mental health, their marriage, you know, their relationship with the kids, it takes a toll. And so mm-hmm. what I've shifted my mindset now is to, well, let's talk about performance. If we want the paramedic, the firefighter to operate at the highest level, so God forbid they get the Parkland shooting, the, you know, the Grenfell yeah. fire, you know, whatever it is, yeah. that is when you need these people to be at their absolute best. And the way yeah. that we work our firefighters could not be more opposite of that. Mm-hmm. They are exhausted. They are beat down. They're riddled with injuries. They're worrying about their marriage yep. or the, you know, all the things. So I think that these young people are coming into this profession in this super you know, internet age where there's just, you can learn anything about anything. And now when you mm-hmm. look up, isn't it healthy to be a firefighter? Google will tell yeah. you, well, actually, yeah. no. It's fucking awful when they look yeah. at the physical and mental health. These young mm-hmm. people, they're tuned into their physical health. They're tuned into their mental health. You know, the ones that really want to do what we do. And then they value their relationships and their time with yep. their loved ones. So they're looking at, like you said, on paper, they're not looking at the profession. They're looking at the working conditions. And they're yep. going, I really want to serve. I really want to work with my hands. I'm going to go be a welder. Because this fire thing, obviously, they don't take care of their people. So yep. all we need to do is change the working conditions, and I guarantee mm-hmm. you'll have lines out the door again. And we're seeing it in Florida that have gone to this 42-hour work week. But
you're exactly right. The schedule changes that we're seeing is such a – we're so far behind. That should have been like done, and that was common knowledge a decade ago of how toxic I think you and I talked about it on the phone. Shift work is now known as a carcinogen. Like it's deemed a carcinogen, right? And that's insane because that's all we are. You know, I mean, I've had shifts where I don't run my first call until 8 p.m. and then we don't see the firehouse until 8 a.m. the next morning when we're at shift change, you know? And I've had mandos or forced overtime where in the entire 48 hours, mind you, I'm a medic. I've got people's lives in my hand. If I am not pushing the right medication, I can literally kill somebody. And, and I'm running on 45 minutes to an hour of sleep in that 48 hours. And that is so harsh and such a horrible feeling to be in. And I mean, I think about it, me and my buddy, man, we joke about this often. We had a couple ambulances here in town that really ran a lot. And there were so many days where I would get home, you know, I'd pull into my driveway and I don't remember turning on my truck. I don't remember stopping at a single red light or stoplight or stop sign. You know, I don't remember like putting on my blinker, anything. And I'm like, how did I get home? Like, I really don't remember that. That's how like delirious and exhausted I was. And you add that onto a 30-year career, it can have major impacts on your health. I mean, that's kind of how we met, but that, you know, I'm a cancer survivor of, you know, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And it popped up really out of nowhere. And I've been doing this for, like I said, you know, almost 11 years. And it popped up out of nowhere. And my doctors said that there's a pretty good chance that it's just the accumulation of the exposures that you've had and the lifestyle that you have. Well, that's hard for me to swallow sometimes, because as far as lifestyle, I mean, I literally might be one of the healthiest people I know. And you know, I constantly am working out. I constantly watch what I eat. I don't smoke. I don't drink. Like, I've kind of been that health and wellness guy my entire life, and yet it happened to me. And so my whole mission has been, hey, if it can happen to me, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but if it can happen to me, it can happen to anybody. And we have to be the best ambassadors for ourselves, because just like you were talking about with, you know, some of the other stuff, we're still very much very far behind in the fire service on a lot of the medical stuff that can be provided to us to ensure that we're living the highest quality lives and giving ourselves the best chance at recovery, at, you know, healing, things like that. And so that's where my focus is a lot right now, is trying to really build that up and raise that awareness and try and do some things to combat against it, you know? So yeah, I couldn't agree more that, and I'm so thankful for your mission. And like you said, even though you're no longer, you know, riding the truck anymore, there's still a mission to be had, and you're still bringing so much awareness to it all. And I think that's so amazing, because we need more voices like that. You know, because for the fire service, we all know this. Most people don't think about their fire department, you know, every day. Most people don't think about their fire department once a year. But when we're called and they call us, they expect us to be 100% the best at our job, dominate the call, do everything right. They don't care if we just went to a wreck where, a baby was lost. They don't care if we're running on 12 minutes of sleep because we just got forced overtime because there's a staff shortage. They don't care that we're on the other side of our zone wrapping up from a structure fire call and we got toned. And they're wondering is, why did it take so long? Why are you not giving my grandma the best service and the kindest service possible? You know, that's the hardest part of the job, is that we might be so exhausted, but the minute we get into the door of whatever home that we access, when they're calling us, we have to bring our A game and turn on, And a lot of times we got to fake it. We got to kind of fake it through and fake it till we make it kind of thing. I mean, there's been so many times that I'm like, this is not an emergency. But if I act like that to that patient, I'm not really, they're not looking at Pat Long. They're looking at whatever fire department I have on my uniform. I'm a representation of that fire department. And that's really, really a tough thing to do, especially when you're exhausted, especially when it's toe pain at 3 a.m. and they want to go get an X-ray. And you're like, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. You know, those are the ones that can eat at you a little bit, but you just got to stay focused. And yeah, it's crazy times. And kind of bringing up COVID really showed a lot of faults in the system. We realized really quickly that we didn't have enough medics on shift. We realized very quickly that we didn't have enough ambulances. We realized very quickly that the minute that we start getting over, you know, as a department with, you know, a mid-sized department, over 80 calls across the department a shift, we are completely inundated. Now we're asking for, you know, mutual aid from different places, and it never has time to correct itself. It never, that entire shift, it is just anarchy. Like, you're just trying to figure out who's what. And we also learned a lot in the healthcare system. I mean, I can speak for the hospital that we had. They did their absolute best, and God bless the nurses that had to be put in that scenario. But they were just putting a medical, like a bed, in the middle of the hallway, and just create, that was a room. And you would have like just this little sheet of paper on the wall saying, oh, this is a room and all that. And you know what it did? You watched the level of care across the board go down drastically, because it was about numbers. It wasn't about level of care. And as a medic, I hated that. I remember so many times them telling me, you know, hey, if it's not this, this, or this, you got to take them to triage. You got to take them up to the front lobby, and they're just going to have to wait. And I'm like, man, and this, only a couple months ago, this was like a, you know, this was a call that would have gotten an emergency room bed pretty quickly. And that really plays some games with your mind, and the mental part of it all was really taxing, really daunting. Each day, you just really didn't understand fully what you were going to get into. You just knew you were going to get slammed, and you probably weren't going to sleep much. And that's some tough days to go in there and do that. So now I sleep a lot better being DOD. We got it pretty good. We still have our nights. We still have our crazy calls, but so. A little bit fewer and farther between. So,
using COVID as an analogy, this, I think it really is a great comparison for the fire service at the moment, because if you just treat it reactively, which is exactly what happened with COVID, you go, oh no, there's a virus. Everyone hide in your house and wear a mask, and the virus can't get past 6 feet. So 6 feet, 1 inch is going to die. So you're fine at 6 feet apart. You know, all this right. Ridiculousness that we were told. Yeah. And in the meantime, if you look at everything that people were told, you know, as far as what to do while we were enduring this pandemic, it was that don't see friends and family, stay in the house. So don't get, yep. You know, any sunshine or exercise or nature, you know, get fast food and alcohol delivered to your house, binge watch the Tiger King. Like, you couldn't have made it to make people more vulnerable to a virus than exactly what they were told. What should have been, you know, educated is all right. There is one truth. The healthier we can make the population, the higher chance there is them suffering from the virus or succumbing to the virus. So in the meantime, let's, you know, encourage people to be, you know, in outdoor spaces, not licking each other's faces, but on the beach, in the park, whatever it is, you know, exercise at home or in the backyard, or, you know, let's focus on getting the healthy food, you know, bolstered, subsidized. And in the meantime, let's talk about putting PE back in schools and pedestrianizing downtowns and creating cycle paths. And so that the lesson is, the takeaway is, well, we need to get the American people healthier. And none of that came out of it. The only conversation about weight loss has been the GLP-1, which is just making drug companies even more money. And the moment you come off it, you're 10 times more likely to gain weight.
Yeah.
But now insert the fire service. You have this, you know, spiraling, nosediving profession. And so they're like, well, let's go into a high school and just get all the kids that want to be firefighters, and we'll train them and we'll do all this. Rather than, let's look at the thing that's broken, which is the way that we're working. Let's invest in an extra shift. So now, because I think you work 48-48s, don't you?
I do,
So our federal firefighters, we need to go from two shifts to four shifts. Because it doesn't matter whether you're running your ass off or not. You are still away from your family for X amount of time, and you're expected to, at the drop of the hat, to respond to whatever emergency. Invest in the front end, forge performance like we do in special operations, special forces, ocean lifeguard, your favorite professional athlete. None of those people are not sleeping every, you know, four days a week. And now all of a sudden, you have now proactively saved so much money because you're not having to recruit twice a year to fill suits seats that people are just going to leave. So those two, I think, are very good kind of parallels. We should be a healthier nation after COVID, but we're not, because we didn't have the humility.
We didn't learn anything. We didn't learn anything.
So the fire service is the same.
And you hit on so many great points. I'll piggyback on another one is, man, I wish that fire departments would almost treat one of their firefighters getting sick with so much sense of like fear because of how much it cost. I've got no problem saying man, so blessed. My cancer actually got covered by workers' comp. It took a while for everything to go through, but it did. They looked at, I'm 33 and I got diagnosed with a cancer that's most commonly found in 65 to 75 year olds. So they thought that was really strange. And then obviously I've been doing it for 10 years. They're like, the exposures, things like that probably did not help. Right. And I have a lymphoma. So everything, you know, your filter system gets clogged. So everything in our gear, everything that we wear is essentially keeping things in as much as it's keeping the heat out. Right. And so we know that, and I'm not blaming it on just that. So part of it is just, that is just the hand I've been dealt. I was super blessed, but my treatments cost over $1.6 million, right? And that's just one firefighter going through cancer. There are departments out there with that have got 5-6 firefighters going through cancer. Well, we already are extremely low funded. We're already extremely short staffed. When that guy is going out, whenever I was out for almost 7 months with my chemo, the fact that my white blood cell count was at like zero. So I had no immune system for a while. So I had to like gradually get myself up before I was allowed to come back to work or approved to come back to work. And, in that time, my treatment was getting covered. My shift, every time my shift came up, somebody got overtime or forced overtime. That cost more money. The financial of a sick firefighter can wreck a department that's barely scraping by financially. And so getting into some of the things that like we're working on with the DECOM project that we put together, we're a nonprofit. Check us out, thedecomproject.com. We got a really cool thing, but we were like, I kind of started digging around at some things that I was like, what are some simple things that we can do that have been just, we're way behind. And actually, you talked about your time out in California, but I talked to quite a few guys out in the West Coast. A couple of these guys were Colorado, a couple other bigger departments around there. And they had been getting scans for the last 10 years. They'll get some kind of scan to actually, you know, the whole department will go through and get a whole ultrasound or maybe an MRI of some type and actually get a picture of what's going on, not just a set of vitals and an eye check, you know, like is what we get. And like I said, I've been doing this for almost 11 years. I had never had a scan. My first ever scan that I had showed me I had over 100 tumors throughout my body. And I had no clue. The day that I got my ultrasound back, I did right here in town, we have a really big bridge, the Sydney Lanier Bridge. And I did a big 10K. I do it every single year. And I actually PR'd my 10K time. I was super pumped, having no clue that I was riddled with tumors. The only thing I knew is I had a small bump on my neck right here under my left ear. And I felt fine. I didn't really have anything going on that I could, justify as like, oh, this is bad. I'm sick. Like I was hunky dory. And, sure enough, found out I was riddled with 100 tumors and is fast growing. And it, I wasn't given great odds of what the next 6 months would look like, to be honest, but, got through it and started praying and talking to some of the other guys. And like I said, talking to some of those guys out in the West Coast, and they're like, man, we've been getting scans forever. Like they even asked, like, how did they not see this in your scans? I was like, bro, we don't get scans through our fire department. This is my third fire department I've been a part of. I've never had a scan ever done. Like not once. We'll do a basic lab panel. I've had a couple echo check, like little stress tests, things like that. And that's really been about it. It's very minor. And that's even if we get some of those. So already finding out we're so far behind even other places here in the U.S. as far as what we do in some of the levels that we get. But then, so we want to bring that to every department that we go to. We want to come to a department. We want to bring a sauna for each fire station. We want to, we teamed up with an awesome supplement company that's going to give some hydration and a sleep aid. It's not melatonin. It's just, it's GABA. It's awesome stuff. Take it. It just helps you relax, a little bit of theanine. Incredible. We teamed up with Fire Wipes, which is the rapid decon wipes. You get done with a fire, you wipe down, get all the hot spots that you can get, boom, like around your neck, wrists, armpits, wherever you can kind of wipe down just to get the quick stuff off. We teamed up with Flame Decon body soap and shampoo. It's packed with activated charcoal. It's actually helping pull out a lot of those toxins out and actually clean yourself. Because I will say, if the next time you go to a fire, your captain says, hey, you got 10 minutes to go decon or whatever, and you shower with Old Spice, you're probably not doing anything good for yourself. I'm just saying. It's common knowledge that Old Spice has more toxins than most of the fires that we're going to. It smells good, but it's not good for you. Choose a better soap. Look into Flame Decon. I'm not getting paid for that plug at all. That's just a company that we really believe in. And then, like I said, teaming up when getting scans, we're just going to do ultrasounds and cardiac, Doppler. And it's huge, man. Like that's something that we want to bring, because especially here in the Southeast, we're severely behind. We're still we're the last departments to hop on with some of these schedule changes. We're the last departments to really have any funding. I mean, if you look at the states as far as firefighter pay, a lot of the ones in the Southeast right here are amongst the lowest, right? And that takes a major hit on really everything. And so we saw such a need. I saw those numbers in my own life for my own department. And now prayers up. We've got another guy that's also going through cancer in my little department. Praying for him. He's dominating. He's doing great. That's another guy that now that department's like, got to help budget for and accommodate and try and cover. You would think it would be one of the utmost priority is keeping us as healthy as possible, because we're really the investment for the fire department. Our health should be the investment for the fire department. Yet we go to fire departments all across the country that still have their gear in the middle of the bay getting blasted with diesel fumes, that still only have one set of gear, that have zero gym equipment, that, or when they have a tough call or something like that, the food's getting dropped off is donuts and Mountain Dews. There's no effort to actually keep that health and wellness, going and keep it right. And going back to the recruiting thing, I think the biggest issue in the fire service the last decade has been they've spent so much effort on trying to recruit and zero on retention. congrats. We got you in. It's year three. You know, you're in the system. Now do what you want. The departments that seem to thrive are the ones that keep a steady game plan for every firefighter they have. They're constantly keeping them challenged, making sure everything is good, focusing on, hey, man, thank you for going and taking these two extra classes that give you this certain skill set. We're going to compensate you for that. Like, you are an asset to our department. You are not just a firefighter, first responder, not a jab at them, but you've taken the effort, you've taken the time to go and get more skills and be more of an asset to your community. We're going to compensate you for it. That to me is the biggest, and I'm about to get on a soapbox, but that's the biggest downfall that I've seen in the fire service the last 10 years is you've got these guys that are so laser focused and want to be the best firefighters and paramedics they can be. And they're going to these classes and they're still getting paid and treated the exact same as the dude that is more worried about his lawn company on his days off than being a firefighter paramedic.
Yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong. That's it. We know the guys that sit there and they think about ways and go into courses to be the best medic and firefighter they can be. And then we think about guys that are like, if I can just get this job, if I can just mow four more lawns a week, I'm going to quit this job. Like, I don't, you know, and I'm like, man, like, we need to be thinking about retention. We need to be thinking about awarding that guy who took the time out of his personal life to go and get this cert or get this course to be a better asset for the department. We need to compensate that. We need to pour into those guys. We need to build leaders. So many departments out there don't have anything to invest into the future leaders, right? If that guy is getting promoted or getting these classes, he's doing it completely on his own, like on his off time, downtime at night. I think the departments that seem to really be thriving are the ones that are like, hey, man, we've got plans for you. Tell us, what are your plans? Where do you want to be in 5 years? How can we as a department help you get there, right? And I wish they could do that. They would do the same thing. Hey, what are some things that we could do to make y'all feel healthier? Can we invest in safer tones? I mean, our tones are still the really loud, like loud, like you wake up and you're in SVT tones. And I'm like, dude, it's 2026, you know, like this is crazy. And, you know, those are things that we can do that I would say are pretty simple fixes that we can do to help keep people healthier, keep people happier, to keep this profession that we love so much thriving, instead of in 20, 30 years, people wonder what the heck happened to the fire service as a whole, you know? Because I was reading an article, you know, the volunteers are almost non-existent now. Across the board, it's harder and harder to get volunteers to do anything. And that's crazy, because you used to have dozens of dudes that were like, man, I got a full-time job, but I still volunteer because I love it, you know, and I love helping and I love being, but that for some reason has gone away as well. That just hurts me. It hurts to see it. I think we can fix it. I think we just have to change our focus to be more on retention and what can we do to keep our guys healthier and treat each firefighter as an investment, and how can we invest and grow this investment to get not only most out of it, but to grow them in a way that they can also build our department and grow our department. I think that's huge. And in a way, that's kind of what the DECOM project is wanting to do. We're wanting to bring some very simple things to the firehouse that can invest in that day-to-day health and wellness. I mean, I've learned so much about sauna use and the benefits of it, and I've got to personally experience the benefits of it, that to be honest, it doesn't make sense why there isn't one in every firehouse in America. You know, not only the or the deconning effect and the detoxifying effect, but also just the benefits that it has on your heart, the benefits that it has on, you know, your sleep and your recovery and the muscle fatigue, so many things that we can do. There's a benefit from the, just sitting in the sauna for a little bit of time. And so those are, we just put together a company of things that we feel like pretty simple fixes that we can go in and really help kind of change the mindset on a department. And what we say is we want to create a new standard of what the minimum expectation of that department providing its firefighters, good gym equipment, saunas, you know, better supplementation, things like making sure that you're hydrated, making sure that you're, you know, getting the right sleep that you need, and then getting scans and staying ahead of it. I would have loved and known what my treatment would have been like if instead of finding 100 bumps in there, we found one. You know, I would have loved that, but I didn't have that scan until way too late. And so there's so many things that we're hitting on, so many things that I'm really hoping that that us as a fire service can continue to do it. And like I said earlier, man, like you bringing that awareness to it, not only the physical stuff, but the mental battles that we go through, the things that we see, we have to be looking out for each other. We have to be ambassadors for each other because there's so many people in the public that just really don't know. And so we have to bring light and share that education and that knowledge to kind of get some of these changes knocked out. Sorry, I can keep talking forever. I apologize about that.
No, don't apologize at all. But just kind of dovetailing on what you said, this is one thing that's been really maddening because I agree with everything you just said. Retention should be the focus. And if therefore you have a group of people that really want to stay a full career, that creates demand at the recruitment level as well. Because people have told me over and over again, our greatest recruitment tool is happy firefighters. 100%.
Senior firefighters that still love the job. Mm-hmm. Tell me, dude, when you're sitting at the table, getting some knowledge just slammed down your throat from a couple senior firefighters, goodness, man, it's like Christmas, man. You are just chomping at the bit for them to tell you something else. And when they are still passionate about their job, that's amazing. And I've been places where it seemed like every senior firefighter was ready to quit or leave. And it was a very toxic feeling. And so you're 100% right. Those senior firefighters being happy and wanting to invest in the new guys is so key and so pivotal for the growth of the fire department.
The downstream cost, though, is what's mind blowing. So it just take the retention crisis, the retention and recruitment crisis at the moment. Locally here, they crunched the numbers on a kind of pseudo study that we were all a part of. And I think the overtime alone, if I'm trying to remember now, was something like $6 million, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, yeah. And then retention, I just got told the other day, this department that protects my family in 5 years, and I think they have like a total of about 400 firefighters on at any one time, but you know, not on any, and 400 like frontline firefighters between the three shifts. They have lost 500 firefighters in the last 5 years.
I've seen it locally as well. Locally, and not just new guys, not just like 1 to 3 year guys. Like you got 10 year guys stepping away, you know? And I'll say this, man, I'm not like bad talking anybody that steps away. You got to do what's best for your family. You know, there's a lot of guys that get into this as young single dudes. And then as you start growing a family, just like we talked about, like you're spending a lot of time away from that family. My biggest priority in my life is being with my family. The only thing I'll say is so far, I feel like I've been able to manage the craziness of the fire schedule and being a very present husband and father. But I will be honest, and I'll put this out there to anybody. The minute that feels like I'm no longer able to achieve those goals and I'm not being the best husband and father I can be, and that's taking away, that'll be the time that I do step away. Like, you know, and I've seen a lot of guys do that, so I don't have any like anything negative to say about them. But I've also seen a lot of guys leave because they're just like, there's no fixing this. I'm stuck. I don't feel like I'm being treated like with any sense of respect. Maybe I don't have as much purpose as I feel like I have. And that's where we've really dropped the ball, you know, in that said department, is we should have been filling those guys up with like, hey man, you're doing great. This is a challenge I have for you. I think you could really thrive at doing this. Hey, you know, let's go show these new guys exactly what we're supposed to be doing and kind of give those guys some of that leadership opportunity. I think they would have seen a lot of those guys stick around. So, yep, you're 100% right, man. That's super scary. That amount of loss in just one fire department in 5 years, that's, I would say nationwide, it's probably looking somewhere similar as far as those numbers go. I remember counting it up in the last department I was at. We had it up on the board. We were counting all these names that we had, and it was just mind blowing how many people we had seen come and go in that short amount of time.
Well, there's a price tag attached to each one of those as well. Not to mention, like you said, the breaking down of camaraderie, the loss of experience, but also like for every new person, this initially was, I was told it was 18, but roughly $20,000 per recruit that then walked out the front door. But someone told me recently it was more like 60 or 70, because you've also got to factor in all the time, a half for the cadre that are teaching these people, you know, and then the recruitment and all that. I mean, the equipment and everything else, paying into the pensions. So that's the money for the extra shifts that you need to front load this. And then that in turn fixes what you just said, when that balance between being home and being at work is offset. And Gainesville, Florida, up the street from me, I've got their previous union and current union presidents coming on together. So the one that spearheaded the move.
Can't wait to watch it
now. Yeah. And they're like, it's amazing, because I'm ready to go back to work the next shift, because I've spent quality time with my family. I'm well rested. And now I'm chomping at the bit to go do another 24 with, you know, the men and women that I work with. That's how it should be. It's not about not loving the job.
Right.
It's the opposite. If you love the job, you fight for conditions to be home for your family and then operate at the peak level for those 24 hours when you go back to the station.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've seen some of the departments doing 48.96, 24.72. I mean, just incredible, like how they're and you know that extra day or two is just literally saving their lives, man. I know this, whenever I get a 4 day or, you know, in my schedule is really interesting. We do 48 on, 48 off for four shifts, and then we get 4 days off. And then every 3 months, those two 4 days bump up next to each other and we get 8 days off. And man, you get a 4 day and you feel so refreshed. You feel ready to like kind of go. So the fact that they get to feel like that every single shift, I'm pretty envious of it. Like, that's pretty amazing. And hopefully we can get there someday. I know, not bad talking to Department of Defense, but we're typically the last to do anything like that. There's a lot more pencil pushing that has to happen for us to get any of those things than some of the other places. But I would say that across the board, that needs to be the new standard, is adding that extra shift to cover and give everybody an extra day. That's huge. And you save so much, because now you're not having as many vacation call outs, sick call outs. I mean, you're saving a fortune. So,
yeah. The 48.96 is still a 56-hour work week, so I wouldn't put that in the same category.
Yeah, my bad.
You're fine. It still seems good compared to what you're working, so I totally get it.
But
I hope that the municipal fire service can then, you know, blaze a path for the federal firefighters, because I just had a Hawaiian one on not too long ago. It was an MMA fighter as well, and he was doing 24-24. Ongoing, like unending.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to fix it for everyone else. But like you said,
Yeah, how if do you do that? Like, you're never not going. You're never not going home or driving to shift. Like, it's insane.
Well, so, you're also, you think about it, you get off at 8 a.m. So you're never actually getting a day off because second day, midnight to 8 a.m., you're working. So you never, you never get a day off. So yeah, there's so much to fix. And I think sadly, focusing on the financial loss is really what's going to move some people. The, the health of their people and the performance should be enough. But if nothing else, for every cancer, you know, survivor that you have costs $1.2 million. Hopefully you'll be like, well, wait a second, shift workers are carcinogen. Maybe if we stop working our people to death, the cancer rates will lower. Because perfect example, the last place I worked protected Disney World. So well sprinkled that we basically never had fires, like almost never.
Oh, yeah.
And they had cancer kill so many of their people. So if it was just carcinogens, then they'd be the healthiest fire department on the planet. But shift work and the numbers of calls that they had throughout the night because they abused their 911 system, you know, lo and behold, you have a lot of these people dying, you know, and I would argue that the shift work is a huge amplifier of the cancer issue that we have.
Yep. Yeah, I was pulling something up. What the number is, I think now, that a firefighter is 9% more likely to develop a form of cancer than any other profession. And how much of that is just going off of the fact that we're not sleeping regularly. Like we, you know, the day-to-day exposures, I think of like the diesel exhaust fumes is something I always think about. The gear that we wear, the station uniforms that we wear with PFAS, things like that. Even the stuff that we cook with, you know, not to mention the foods we eat are still horrible. And so I just think about so many of those things and I'm like, man, we've got to, that awareness has got to be raised and it needs to be common knowledge. And hopefully just by doing things like this, having conversations like this and getting in front of the right people, we can continue making that change. It's just happening way too slowly. And also, you talk about mental health all the time. I really do love your show. And you talk about mental health a lot. And dude, you give me a couple weeks of really cruddy sleep and I'm one of the most optimistic and happy people I know. And I'm in the dumps. I'm having a hard time mentally, and we're seeing it in droves as well as firefighter suicide. I mean, just at insane numbers. And so many of the times we're like, well, oh man, he was always a black cloud. Like he always had really bad calls. You know, that I'm not taking that away from anything, but how much of it was the fact that he was just absolutely beat down and exhausted and his body was so inflamed and so fatigued that your mind really does start playing tricks on you in that point. And a rested body, a rested mind can really work and navigate and compensate incredibly well. But when we're sleeping terribly and then in working way too much time, you know, throughout the week, throughout the year, and it's taking a toll on everything else that we're doing, our family that we love, how we eat, how we do anything. No, yeah, it's going to take an absolute toll. And you're going to see the number of psychiatric, you know, incidents go up and suicide even go up. It's just, it's heartbreaking and it needs to end. And hopefully, I can't wait to see some of the statistics that they see from these schedule changes, and just in what in a year, how much they saved as far as vacation and sick time, how much they saved as far as, you know, how the firefighters give us a pullback of like how they felt going into each shift. How'd you feel leaving each shift? Did you feel like you got more from your workday? Because I know this, man, when we were working overtimes all the time, you got way a lot less done in your day. Like the station, you were, I mean, there were days where they're like, hey, I know everybody's like super tired and on their like fourth overtime in a row. We're running calls. Make sure your truck is checked off. and we'll do dinner at 6, you know. And that was it. Like, everybody was just in their room sleeping. And that's no way to go about it, man. We want to, like, show up feeling like we're ready to get after it. And but when you're grinding like that, it's terrible. So, yeah, man. I mean, golly, we just hit on so many things. But I really can't thank you enough for letting me share and have this conversation with you. And I think you're doing an incredible job of bringing some awareness to these things. You're very well knowledged in that. And like I said, with the Decom Project, we're so excited about some of the things that we're bringing in. We've gotten, we're starting right there in South Georgia, Southeast Georgia, and trying to, you know, kind of climb down into Northeast Florida. But the goal is to go as big as this thing will go. But every time, I'll tell you this, every time we have a meeting or I talk to you about it, I always say our goal really is that we work ourselves out of the need for our nonprofit. That we raise enough awareness, that we go in and we set the standard enough, we get in front of the right people to where what we're bringing is now just, that's an established norm. And at that point, we can kind of dust our hands and know that we made that impact. I will say, I feel like we're unfortunately a long ways away from that being the case. So we're ready to work as hard as we can to get these things done. But that is our goal. And we all talk about that. Like, that if we do this well enough, we should work ourselves out of a job, right? And so, yeah, man, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This is incredible. I can't wait to hop on and talk to you some more down the road, and we can kind of compare some of the things we've learned and all the crazy stuff that's going on, you know, between then and now. And, man, I'm very blessed, and I think it's been really cool that our paths have crossed this way. So thank you.
Well, thank you. One thing before I let you go then, if people listening want to either be a recipient of the Decom Project or they want to help, they want to contribute, where are the best places to find you?
Yeah, man. So we're super simple. Our website is thedecomproject.com, D-E-C-O-N, like short for decontaminate. I mean, you can go on there. You can see... really simple website. It looks great, like super cool, but the donation page is right there. You can donate. Also, my information is all over there. Man, I'm on social media a lot. I do daily devotionals for firefighters. I try and share and be as open as possible. If you have any questions, you need to have anybody like pray for you, talk with you, anything, hit me up. That, like, you have my number right there. Also on there, we have a message board. If you're a department that's like, hey, some of this is looking like something we want to do, obviously we're starting right here where we're at, but we'd love to get you in the system. Like, we're doing this completely for free. We're not charging that department anything. The only thing that we may ask is like, hey, show us some people that we can get in touch with to raise funds to actually help your department and get us in touch. And then I'll do all the legwork. Like, I'll call these people. I'll tell them what our goals are, what we're trying to do. One thing I have said is if you're doing any kind of cool events or fundraisers and, you know, you need somebody to tag on or help out or, you know, share about it, like, the Decom Project will gladly do that. That's kind of how we're trying to get our name out there. We are 100% not in it to make any money. We're just trying to raise awareness and get into these departments and show them that we can give them some tools to help combat some of the cancer and cardiac, which unfortunately seem to be the two, you know, killers of the fire service. And we want to get ahead of that. And we're starting one department at a time. So please reach out, show your support. Follow us on Instagram at the Decom Project. We post on there a lot. We have a bunch of really cool guys that we've teamed up with as well. That are, I mean, just some really cool stuff going on. And so I know this is kind of a crazy conversation about the fire service, but I truly do believe that the best is yet to come. We are taking baby steps in the right direction. It's just going to take a lot of time. We've had a crazy route. It's kind of been some kind of like a roller coaster, all crazy, but we're really starting to kind of figure it out. And the passion for the fire service is really, really high right now. And so we just got to keep getting new people that are fired up. And just like we talked about, keep the old guys fired up so that they can teach the new guys the cool stuff. And I think this is the greatest job on the planet. And James, the stuff you're doing, this is so awesome, man. Thank you. And yeah, guys, I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.